not sexual or weird, before you even ask. Simply seeking a friend on my journey. Could that be you? Lydia's brows furrowed in confusion for a few moments before a single name popped into her head. Ollie. Of course, Ollie would have remembered the password Lydia had accidentally let slip a few months before, after they'd both got drunk and started messaging strangers on the app together. She was just composing an accusatory text rant to her daughter when another message pinged through on her dating app, and she immediately swiped to read it. "Hi, Elster857, cool name, by the way." She smiled. None of the other men who'd messaged her had thought it was a cool name. Even she didn't think it was a cool name. It was just anonymous enough that she didn't have to reveal personal information to any dates who turned out to be lunatics. Safety first. "I hope this doesn't make me sound like a weirdo, but my sister made me sign up to this app against my will, and yours is the first profile I've seen that caught my attention. I'm not looking for love, but I do love adventures, and I'd really like to help you with your bucket list and, hopefully, get my damn sister off my back at the same time. Drop me a message if you're up for it. Jake." Huh. Now, that she had not been expecting. He hadn't awkwardly complimented her looks, hadn't come at her with any kind of sleazy innuendo. He'd used his real name, she presumed, anyway, and his profile picture was a simple snap of him on a night out, grinning broadly at the camera. All in all, he seemed like a genuine kind of guy. The kind of guy who might stop her getting mauled by wild animals on a mountain walk or drowned in the sea while surfing. Not to mention the kind of guy who, at the very least, might help stop her family setting her up with literally any man who had a pulse. She hit the reply button and tapped out a message, suggesting a time and place to meet and signing the message as Elster857 with a smiley face, since he had made the comment about her username. And then she pressed send, grinning a little to herself at how bold and decisive she'd been. How adventurous. Lily was having an effect on her already. Chapter 5. Jake Jones had a small scar on his lip that Lydia found quite distracting at first. He'd all but burst into the bar that day, a bundle of barely contained energy, buzzing with such life that Lydia couldn't help but smile. He was different than she'd thought he'd be from his profile picture, less put together with a casual brush of stubble, his mop of light brown hair wild on top, but cropped close to his head on the sides. And that scar, just an inch or so long, which made his lip curl to one side whenever he smiled. And he smiled a lot, so much so that his eyes, a lighter shade of brown than Lydia had seen on anyone before, were edged by permanent lines, his skin barely having to remember the creases. But none of those things were the first thing that Lydia had noticed about Jake. No, the very first thing she'd seen as he'd bounded up to the bar where she was sitting had been the fluorescent pink plaster cast on his right wrist. She'd looked up at the sight of it with such surprise and curiosity that she completely forgot about the sheet of light purple paper she'd been studying. "Nice to meet you, Lily," he'd said, gesturing vaguely to the list, the lilt of an indiscernible northern accent in his voice. "And I guess this is the list." And then he'd chuckled lightly to himself and smiled, which was the point at which Lydia first noticed the scar. That would have been the ideal time for Lydia to tell him that she actually wasn't Lily Bennett at all. Another good time would have been when he said, a few minutes later,
"Sorry, very presumptuous of me, is it Lily?"
But she didn't correct him then either. There had been something so appealing about the way Jake had said Lily. She couldn't quite quantify it. She certainly didn't remember her own name ever sounding like that. It was new and exciting and fresh. Adventurous, some might say. More like the kind of woman that she was aiming to be, the kind of woman who might be able to make her ex-husband fall back in love with her, and a lot less like the husk of a woman that she was. So, after a beat, what she said in return was, "Hi, I'm Lily. Nice to meet you, Jake. It is Jake, isn't it?"
"In the flesh,"
he'd said with another grin, and then he'd pulled over a stool with his good arm and plopped himself down next to her. She couldn't have said for sure what had led her to lie in that moment. Maybe it was how distracted she'd been by Jake's bright pink cast, or his garish shirt, or maybe it was the split second that she'd realised that this was her chance to be someone, anyone, other than boring old Lydia Gray. Someone who was exciting, someone who had adventures, someone like Lily Bennett. In the minutes that had followed, she'd brazenly ignored the small voice in her head telling her to be honest, and with every second that passed, it became less and less likely that she was going to tell him at all. Until 5 minutes in, the possibility fizzled out like a used sparkler, any hope of coming clean fading to ash until it wasn't a possibility at all. But that was okay, Lydia told herself, because Jake was only going to be her adventure friend. Did it really matter so much if he never knew her real name? She didn't think so. And she found there was a certain amount of freedom in that thought, an easiness which made her much more relaxed than she otherwise would have been. If this were a date, she might have thought more about the fact that Jake Jones, perfectly attractive male specimen though he was, ticked exactly zero of her boxes. And oh my, did Lydia have boxes. If this were a date, she might have thought more about how Jake Jones very definitely was not Adam. But it wasn't, and she didn't. And as she cast her eyes over his outfit, she felt more amused than anything. His jeans were smart enough, though they fell just a little too far down his well-worn desert boots. And he was wearing a Hawaiian shirt, of all things, at least a size too big for him, with creases he hadn't quite managed to iron out across the hem. He quirked an eyebrow at her as he caught her gaze on his shirt. She blushed.
"I should probably apologise for this shirt," he said, his mouth falling back into its lopsided smile. "I wouldn't normally wear it on a date, but it's damn near impossible to get this beast through any of my nice shirt sleeves."
And he held up his right wrist with a flourish. Lydia smiled in return, mentally preparing to put a tick in her well-dressed box until he said, with a mischievous twinkle in his eye,
"And honestly, this is my favourite shirt."
"This is not a date," she said firmly, although she tried to temper it with a smile. That said, toucans, though?
"I love toucans."
He straightened in his chair, his face suddenly sober.
"I won't apologise for toucans."
Lydia frowned. "I wasn't asking you to." But he just laughed, his face falling back into those well-worn lines as he did.
"I'm kidding, Lil. I know it's completely ridiculous. That's probably the main reason I love it."
Something happened inside her chest then, at the use not just of someone else's name, but of someone else's pet name. It was a small tug, a minor discomfort. She had always hated nicknames, although in her family it came with the territory. Maybe that was it. It certainly couldn't be a sudden wave of remorse for the decision she'd made. "Only my friends call me Lil," she said, through the light grip of her throat, but he only laughed easily in a way that told her he was probably going to call her Lil even more now. She covered the feeling with a smile. "What's the story with your arm, anyway?"
"Shark attack,"
he said without missing a beat. "Yeah, right." He tipped his chin up, looking at her closely for a moment.
"Sounds cool, though, doesn't it?"
"You're really not going to tell me?" His smile widened.
"You have to earn it."
"And how do I do that?" He shrugged, the mischievous glint in his eye again.
"You'll know when it happens."
He looked away for a moment, effortlessly summoning the edgy-looking barmaid and ordering himself a drink before turning back to Lydia with a smug smile. She couldn't help but smile back. Fine, then tell me something about yourself. What do you do for a living?
Ex-table tennis pro.
She snorted a laugh, frustrated more than amused. Oh, for goodness sake.
That one,
he said, turning to take his drink from the barmaid with a huge grin.
Is true. I just retired this spring.
He took a slow sip before turning to tap his bank card on the reader.
Thanks, this is perfect.
Lydia huffed a laugh. I didn't know that was a thing. His face relaxed as if he were about to tell a story he'd told 100 times before.
I can assure you it's very much a thing. I wouldn't say I made celebrity sportsman money, but it wasn't a bad living.
He paused to sip his drink, nodding slightly as he set the glass back down on the bar.
I saw the world, won some titles, enough to get by on, lived in Germany for a few years and then Korea.
His eyes disappeared back into their well-worn creases.
Living the dream, you know.
Lydia sipped her wine. Sounds exotic. Another smile.
That's me all over.
Her brow creased into a frown, curious. Why did you stop? He held up his cast pointedly. Ah, yes, your injury. From the
Formula One crash. Of course.
She laughed. She couldn't help it. Jake's energy was infectious.
Anyway, less about me,
he said, holding his drink in his good hand before raising it to her in a question.
I want to know what's on your list, Lily Bennett.
Lydia was quite taken aback by his forwardness, but she couldn't deny that there was a part of her that actually liked it. This was exactly the kind of energy she'd need to power through her adventures.
Can I read it?
He asked when she didn't respond.
I'd like to know what I'm signing myself up for.
There was a quality to his voice that sat well with her, a tone that was encouraging without being pushy. She imagined he'd make a great hostage negotiator. Sure, she replied, and she pushed the list across to him. He pored over the paper, straightening out the creases just as she had done many times, and after a moment he started to read.
Ride a horse, he looked up at her. Good start, solid choice.
Lydia huffed a laugh. Thanks. His eyes went back to the paper.
Jump off the 10-metre diving board. Ooh, brave, I like it.
Is 10 metres high? It's not that high, is it? He shrugged, his good hand going to his chin.
This room is, what, maybe 2.5 metres high?
He looked around as if looking for confirmation.
So, only like 4 of these rooms stacked on top of each other.
She felt a sudden rush of panic. That is high. He nodded enthusiastically, that grin back on his face.
That's what makes it brave.
What if I'm not brave?
You are.
He took a slow sip of his drink.
I mean, you wrote this list.
And there was the third opportunity for Lydia to tell him the truth, however awkward it would have been at this stage. But still, she said nothing.
Climb a mountain, he continued. I love this one.
A mountain also sounded high, now that Lydia thought about it. He sat back on his stool, considering her.
Are we thinking a small mountain or like...
He gestured vaguely with his good hand.
Everest.
A small mountain, she said quickly. This is a list of things to do before I die, not a list of things that might make me die. He burst into a proper laugh at that, and the sound was deep and warm, different from the smaller chuckles she had heard from him previously.
I like you, Lily Bennett.
At last, something they had in common. Lydia, too, was quite the fan of Lily Bennett.
Okay,
he said, looking back down.
Go camping.
He met her eyes, palm turning upwards.
You've never been camping. I can't even.
Lydia smiled. Aga would never allow such a thing.
Too much like the camps, she'd always said, quite dramatically,
although Lydia was pretty sure they didn't have airbeds and citronella candles in the camps. Never, she said, and he shook his head slowly. He read a moment more before sitting back on his stool with a gasp.
You've never been on a roller coaster, Lily!
He ran his good hand through his hair, blowing out a breath.
Were you never 12?
She shrugged. I've just always been a holding-the-bags kind of person.
Well, that stops today, he said definitively. No more holding the bags. Bags don't even need holding, they're the things that hold.
He fished his phone out of his jeans pocket, quickly snapping a photo of the list before she could object. But she didn't want to object. There was a quality to Jake that she very much liked. His enthusiasm so infectious as to make her feel even more excited about the list. She wasn't the type to easily get on with new people, but she felt drawn to him, as if they'd been friends for a long time. She levelled him with a look. What if I decide you're too weird to be my adventure buddy? He mock gasped, clutching at his chest theatrically.
You wound me.
She raised a single eyebrow and he laughed in response.
Don't worry, Lil. I'm weird in a good way. I'm guaranteed to make every adventure 300% more enjoyable.
Lydia actually thought he might be right. At the very least, she was already having more fun with him than she'd had with any of the weirdos she'd dated. But she didn't say that to Jake. Instead, she just smiled, tucking a stray strand of perfectly straight hair behind her ear. I just want to know why, she said. He cocked his head, confused.
Why?
Why you would want to tick things off somebody else's bucket list. Not that Lydia had any room to talk, of course. He downed the remainder of his drink in one before raising the empty glass to her.
Okay, that's easy.
When he set the glass back on the bar, his smile was softer than it had been, earnest somehow.
I've been back in this country for 7 weeks and pretty much all of my friends are still out in Korea. I live alone in a tiny flat, so I've been hanging round with my sister and her family, which was lovely for a week or two, but now feels deeply tragic. Not to mention that she's absolutely sick of the sight of me.
He huffed out a little laugh.
She's desperate to set me up with someone, but honestly, it's the last thing I need right now.
His smile then was almost sheepish, and it made him look younger than she suspected he was.
A friend would be good. Adventures would be even better. So when I saw your profile, I guess it just felt like fate.
His mouth lifted back into that half smirk.
But something cooler than fate, obviously.
She considered him for a long time, this curious live wire of a man, different from everyone she'd ever known. She thought about how much time she spent either with her parents or on her own, now that Ollie was thousands of miles away and Tosh and Mila were all tied up with Clara, and for a moment she totally got where he was coming from. He was alone, she was alone. He seemed genuine. Was she in any position to turn down his offer of help? What would Lily Bennett do? Okay. Jake looked as if he'd swallowed his tongue.
Okay.
She laughed. I said okay, didn't I?
Are you going to tell me that men and women can't be just friends?
My best friend is a man.
And a sex never got in the way.
A little snort of laughter escaped her at the very idea. Literally never.
I'm preaching to the choir then, he said,
the broadest grin yet stretching across his face.
So now we've fended that awkwardness off, what do you say we get another drink and start making plans for how you're going to smash the hell out of all those life goals?
and Lydia nodded as she grinned back. You're buying, Mr. Ping Pong. And to Jake's credit, he did. Even when Lydia had drained her third white wine and chanced asking for one of those fancy cocktails that gave very little change from a tenner. And though she noticed that Jake switched to water after his second rum and coke, she also noted that he didn't once complain about it. Adam had always stopped her after three drinks, so by the time they walked out together into the pleasantly cool air of the late spring night, Lydia was feeling quite light-headed, giddy from the drink and from all the plans they'd put together. She'd been annoyed with Ollie for meddling initially, but she couldn't deny that it had all turned out rather for the best. If she were really honest with herself, she had been kind of scared about going it alone. She didn't know the first thing about camping or tattoos or surfing, but now she had a partner in crime. A partner, she noted with some relief, who seemed to know considerably more about these things than she did. And she couldn't wait for their adventures to begin. Chapter 6. As much as Lydia begrudged her current living situation, there was one thing she particularly enjoyed about being at her parents' house. Ladies' night. None of them were ever completely sure how it had started, certainly not in Lydia's lifetime, but somewhere along the line, Thursday evenings had become sacrosanct, a time the women of the family earmarked for the incredibly important business of eating food and putting the world to rights. The attendees had changed over the years, but the heart remained. Aga and Basia, as the only remaining original members, had absolute say over who was to be admitted to the inner circle. Some had it as a birthright, others married into it. One thing was certain, though, a bit like the mafia. Once you were in, you were in. On the last Thursday of every month, they ordered food in rather than cooking for themselves, and on that particular Thursday, the ladies had decided on Indian. Aga would always say a small prayer just after they finished eating anything particularly rich, an apology to her late mother, who had never coped well with spicy dishes. Aga repeatedly claimed that any time she forgot, she would spend the night suffering from heartburn so unpleasant that it could not possibly be attributed to anything other than a curse sent from beyond the grave. Lydia had almost laughed out loud the first time she'd heard the curry prayer, but these days she sometimes found herself bowing her head in solidarity. Though she was not a practicing Catholic as her mother was, Lydia did find herself occasionally saying a silent prayer that Aga would have plentiful Gaviscon. After all, as Lydia had discovered for herself in recent years, heartburn was no laughing matter. Aga was on fine form that particular evening and, with a white wine or three under her belt, she was regaling the women with a very animated story about her run-in with the new stylist at the salon round the corner.
"And now my hair is uncontrollable,"
Aga bellowed, her drawn-on brows pulling into a sharp frown.
"I mean, look at it!"
She gestured furiously to her short salt-and-pepper bob, a style she had worn religiously since the mid-80s, though it was much heavier on the salts these days.
"It's all gone downhill in there since Mandy left," she huffed, running a hand over the ends of her hair.
Lydia caught Mila's eye over the table and had to stifle a giggle. Aga's hair looked exactly as it always did.
"Aga," Basia scolded gently. "You're too harsh on the girl. It looks lovely."
"It looks the same,"
Mila mouthed, half covering her mouth with her hand, and Lydia couldn't hold the snort of laughter in. She tried her best to disguise it as a sneeze. Aga eyed her with suspicion.
"Oh, sorry," Lydia chirped innocently. "Hay fever season."
Lydia had never had hay fever in her life, but had managed to use it as a cover for inappropriate outbursts multiple times over the years. Aga's hands went to her hair again, as if to smooth it back into place, and there was still irritation in her voice when she barked,
Pass me the poppadoms, Basha.
But her friend just smiled, handing the plate to Aga and shaking her head ever so slightly as if to say, what are you like? Basha was the light to Aga's dark, the softness to her friend's sharp lines. They complemented each other so perfectly, the yin and the yang, that they had often seemed a better suited couple than the women ever had with their own partners. And never more so than after Bashir's husband had followed his lover to Gdansk one summer and never come home, leaving Basha heartbroken and alone with a mortgage to pay and a teenager to raise. That was over 20 years ago now, and though Basha had long made her peace with it, Aga would not allow his name to be mentioned in her presence to this day. If Basha could not bring herself to be angry at the father of her child, Aga had said more than once, then she would be furious enough for both of them. And no one could wear fury quite like Agatha Pearson. She wasn't a cold person, far from it. Aga loved her family and friends fiercely, but sometimes her love could be a little too far over on the fierce side. Lydia, Elena and Tosh had grown up almost with two mothers, and all the siblings were very clear on which one to approach in any particular situation. Basha was the mother who would let them cry on her shoulder after a bad breakup. Aga, on the other hand, was more the type who might slash their ex's tyres. Aga took a bite of poppadom, piled high with mango chutney, and the taste seemed to calm her rage a little. She was even further placated when Mila smiled sweetly and said, I think your hair looks lovely, Chocha Aga.
Thank you,
Aga said pointedly around her mouthful, and as her eyes found her daughter, Lydia shrugged. I think your hair looks lovely too, Mama, she said innocently, but Aga's lips only pressed into a hard line.
No one likes a brown nose, Ormishko.
Lydia couldn't hide her smile that time. The conversation took second place then as the women filled their plates from the aromatic stack of tubs occupying the middle of Basha's dining table. Passanda and opiaza and buna with three different kinds of rice and two huge naans. They ate hungrily and almost in silence, save for occasional satisfied murmurs, and when they were finished, Aga sat back in her chair as she always did, muttering quietly in Polish with her hands clasped firmly in front of her.
So,
Aga said abruptly as she finished her prayer, turning her attention to Mila and leaning forwards on her elbows.
How are you getting on with preparations for Clara's christening?
Good, thank you. We've got the date booked and Tosh is trying to arrange the club for the party afterwards. It's going to be the 15th of September. Mila smiled, looking around at the others. Put it in your diaries.
The week after your birthday,
Aga said, talking to Lydia, although she didn't turn to look at her.
Maybe that can be your first date with Andrzej.
Okay, firstly, Lydia replied, her mouth taking the reins while her brain whirred into action, searching for something, anything, to get her out of such a thing. Going to a christening is an extremely strange thing to do on a first date. Come on, there must be something, think. And secondly, she continued, her mouth again taking charge without her brain fully registering what she was about to say next. I've met someone. His name is Jake, and if anyone's going to take me to Clara's christening, not that I need taking anywhere, because as we've discussed before, I am a grown woman, it'll be him. Basha's beaming smile filled her face. Mila's eyes widened in an unspoken question. Aga nearly fell off a chair.
Lidka, I'm so happy for you,
Basha gushed, genuine delight in her tone.
You deserve this.
So happy, Mila agreed, her face pulling into an expression that said, we'll talk later. But Aga didn't look so happy, or maybe she was. On a face like hers, it was difficult to tell.
Mishko, who is this Jake?
Aga muttered with a frown, her use of the pet name eliminating any chance of her being pleased about Lydia's announcement.
What are his credentials? He is real, isn't he?
Lydia huffed a laugh. Yes, of course he's real. We've only been on one date, but we got on really well. We've been texting a bit and he's taking me out for the day on Saturday. In Lydia's defence, all of those things were true. Okay, maybe she hadn't mentioned that he was taking her out as a friend, and she definitely hadn't mentioned that he currently thought she was someone else, but as it was, she hadn't told her mother a single lie, and for that, Lydia felt very pleased with herself indeed. She could never get a lie past Aga. The woman was like a human polygraph test. And with that, Aga's face brightened, her expression softening as much as it ever did, and she threw her hands up to the sky.
Oh, Bosha, I never thought I would see the day.
I've been married for the overwhelming majority of my adult life, Lydia said with a sigh. Aga nodded.
And we will get you married again.
So, Mila said an hour or two later, who is Jake and what is actually happening with him? She chuckled, because I know that wasn't the whole truth. Lydia was driving her home under the guise of Mila not being able to because she'd had a caesarean. This had initially been the truth, although Clara was now almost 5 months old and Mila had been driving happily for well over half of that time. But Aga and Bashia had little to no knowledge about modern birthing conventions, and the younger women had realised after the first few times that the journey provided the ideal opportunity to debrief after ladies' night. If Tosh was Lydia's best friend, Mila sat in a strong second place. The women had bonded almost on sight when Tosh first introduced them, and now, 14 years later, Lydia thought of Mila not only as her sister, of sorts, but also as an important ally in the family group. Lydia took a deep breath. Everything I said was true. But, she smiled, Mila could read her like a book. But, we're just friends. She saw Mila cock an eyebrow in her peripheral vision, but she didn't say anything. He's not my type at all, but he's a really good guy, Lydia continued, so relieved to finally get it off her chest that the words just started spilling out and then wouldn't stop. He just moved back here from Korea and he hasn't got any friends nearby. I haven't really been out just to enjoy myself since, well, since everything. I figured that it'd be good for me to go and have some old-fashioned fun without all the pressure of romantic stuff, you know? Mila nodded slowly. Plus, you can give our family the impression that you're together, so they stop setting you up with literally any man with a pulse. Lydia grinned. Bingo. Genius. I thought so. She heard Mila laugh softly to herself. He's Korean. Lydia shook her head. He played table tennis professionally. Apparently it's big there. Who knew? They both laughed then, together, before falling into a comfortable silence for the rest of the short journey, each lost in their own thoughts. Lydia hadn't told Tosh or Mila about the list. In fact, she hadn't told anyone else about the list. No one but Ollie, anyway. She didn't really know why. And Jake, of course. Only Jake still believed that it was her list, because Jake still believed that she was Lily Bennett. And she hadn't told a single soul about that. They pulled up outside Mila's house a few minutes later, and Lydia turned to look at her friend properly for the first time since they'd set off. So, you're not going to tell me it's a terrible idea? Mila shook her head, smiling earnestly. I think it's a great idea. Honestly? Honestly, yes, Mila said, laughing lightly at Lydia's confused face. You were married for a long time. Now you're not. I think you need to find out who you are now, without Adam, before you even entertain the idea of being with someone else. She reached a hand over to gently squeeze Lydia's wrist. Not that you need it, but you have my blessing. Lydia smiled back at her, the warmth of Mila's hand on her wrist making her heart swell. She had been such a great support over the last year, so steady, despite all the changes in her own life. Lydia would never have been able to put into words how much Mila meant to her. So instead, she told her in her own way. "Have I ever told you you're too good for Tosh?"
"Almost every week," Mila said through her laugh, and she leaned to kiss Lydia lightly on the cheek.
"Good night, Lids. Thanks for the lift." And Lydia smiled in return. "Any time." Mila clambered out of the car and Lydia watched her creep into the silent house, a single dim light on in the hallway outside the front bedroom. It reminded her of when Ollie had been a baby, how carefully she and Adam had both tiptoed around the house, and a sharp pang of longing hit her in the chest like a bullet. They hadn't needed anyone else then. They'd been so happy, just the three of them. Yes, they had been young, really young in fact, but Adam had been such an attentive father, such a proud father. She didn't know how it had happened, how that person had turned into the man who had looked her straight in the eye and told her he was leaving. She hadn't seen the cracks at all. One day they had been a happy family and the next he was gone. She took a deep breath in and let it out slowly, thumping her aging car into gear and starting out on the 7-minute journey back to her parents' house, Mila's words replaying in her head the whole way. "Find out who you are now." But how the hell was she going to do that? Chapter 7. In retrospect, it probably hadn't been the best idea to go on a 200-mile round trip with an almost total stranger, but the thought didn't even enter Lydia's head until she was halfway up the A1, and by that point it was much too late. And anyway, Jake didn't feel like a stranger. She'd Googled him after they'd met the first time. It seemed like the sensible thing to do. She'd found his Wikipedia page straight away, although the information there was sparse. Little more than birthplace, Bishop Auckland, and a few of the titles he'd won, with a small picture of a much younger Jake grinning a much straighter grin as he held up a trophy as big as his face. Still, as she read the page, she had been delighted to find that everything he'd told her about himself had been completely true, though there was absolutely no mention of the accident that had ended his career. The accident he'd been so cagey about that first night they'd met. Still, she'd satisfied herself that he probably wasn't a serial killer, and as soon as he climbed into her passenger seat, she'd felt it. The same feeling she'd had in the bar, a comfort almost. He was just a very easy person to be around. Most of the time, anyway. Some of the time he exhausted her. It was like he was plugged in somewhere, with no off switch, from his constant fidgeting to the mile-a-minute stories he came out with. When the time had come to get started on the list, Lydia had had a brief panic, but Jake had talked her round in that laid-back way of his, the one that made her want to be laid back too. He'd said he knew exactly what she should try first, and though she'd secretly hoped that it was stargazing, which was, she noted, the only non-scary thing on the whole damn list, she'd made her peace with having her boundaries pushed. They couldn't do the things on the list in order, he'd said, because of the restrictions he had with his arm, but they could do them as and when he was able. And so the first adventure he'd suggested was 5, ride a roller coaster. That had sent Lydia into a little bit of a tailspin, though she would never admit as much to Jake, and she'd texted Ollie in a panic at what she hoped was a reasonable time of day where she was. "You know, you should start an Instagram account," Ollie had replied, completely ignoring her mother's impending nervous breakdown. "How's the world going to know how much fun you're having if it isn't documented on social media for all to see?" "Bloody Zoomers," Lydia had started to type, although she was glad she didn't send it, because within seconds she'd had another thought. How was Adam going to know how much fun she was having if it wasn't documented on social media for all to see? She'd always thought her life much too ordinary to brag about online, but she saw no way around it now. "Okay," she'd replied, and then laughed out loud at the long string of celebratory emojis her daughter sent in return. And she had set up an account, though she currently had 0 followers and didn't actually have the faintest idea how to get any.
"Next junction,"
Jake chirped then, tearing her away from her thoughts of technological ineptitude. She'd planned to put the address of the theme park Jake suggested into her map app, but Jake insisted that he could navigate. As they turned off the A1 and onto more minor roads, he directed her one step at a time, effortlessly, like he always knew exactly where he was, and that made her think of the things she'd read about him.
"You're from around here, aren't you?"
He didn't answer, but she felt him stop moving for a moment in the passenger seat, and she took that as confirmation, a slow smile spreading across her face at the idea of outwitting him.
"You're not the only one who knows stuff."
"You stalked me."
His voice was soft, curious rather than accusatory. She half shrugged, as much as she could with 2 hands on the wheel. She was nothing if not a careful driver.
"Stalked is a strong word."
"I was." She cocked her head a little to the side, searching for a diplomatic way to say that, yes, she had totally stalked him.
"Backing up your story."
"And?"
"And it all checks out."
He laughed at that.
"I was born in Bishop Auckland, which I'm sure you already knew from my Wikipedia page."
Lydia chuckled softly to herself and she saw him smile in her periphery.
"But we didn't stay too long there,"
he continued, an easy storytelling lilt falling back into his voice.
"My dad was a salesman working for a big car company and he'd get moved every few years, depending on where the sales needed a boost. We lived all over, the northeast mostly, bits of Yorkshire, 2 hellish years in Coventry."
"So why Leeds now?"
"It's where my parents are,"
he said simply.
"My mum was from Leeds originally and my sister is here and so they came back here when they retired."
"Do you live with them?"
"No,"
he said, the husk of humour in his voice.
"I'm 38.
Lydia laughed too, quickly.
"I know, imagine."
"What about you, Lil?"
he asked, his weight shifting as he stretched his legs out in the footwell.
"What would I find if I Googled you?"
A small flare of panic had begun to creep up her gullet at the mention of Lily's name, and at the idea of him carrying out a background check on her, it swelled and burned in her chest. She wondered how much she could get away with. She smiled, her eyes on the road, and decided the truth was her best bet. Most of the truth, anyway.
"You will find very little, because I've led a completely uninteresting life."
"Okay."
His laugh was barely more than a breath out.
"Give me an overview."
She shrugged.
"I was pregnant and married before I was 20, then got a really boring job in a bank where I still work."
This time she laughed, the sound more hollow coming from her.
"Now I'm getting divorced and I mainly hang out with my family while my only child is adventuring around the world. I've never done anything interesting enough to end up on the internet in any capacity, and as of this week, I have 1 social media account with 0 followers, though I have used my daughter's accounts on occasion to stalk people."
Her mouth edged into a smirk. "If stalking is what you want to call it." His laugh that time was louder, more like the Jake she'd met at the bar.
"And that, of course, is why you wrote your list."
It was a question, she assumed, but it didn't sound like one.
"Something like that,"
she replied with a smile that was less genuine than she would have liked, and she was very pleased indeed when the conversation lightened up for the rest of the journey. The theme park was more run down than Lydia had expected, all sun-bleached warning signs and peeling paintwork, and there was an energy about it that didn't sit well with her at all. Jake, however, was in his element, chattering away as he guided her through the huge network of intertwining paths that crisscrossed the park, his gait so light it sometimes seemed almost as if he were skipping.
He'd dressed a little better today, in so much as he looked more comfortable with what he was wearing, but he was still a million miles from Adam's put-together outfits. He'd managed to force that crazy pink cast through the arm of a logo T-shirt for a brand she didn't recognise, and he'd paired it with dark grey jeans that actually fit his well-worn maroon Converse going 10 to the dozen as his stride sped up. He stopped abruptly as they reached a wooden archway, a fork in the path veering off to one side underneath, and his face broke into a huge grin as he turned back to face her.
"Here we are,"
he said, his excitement accentuating the curve in his smile where his scar pulled at it.
"Are you ready for your very first adventure?"
"Yes," Lydia said, but what she really meant was no. A roller coaster ride was not her idea of a starter adventure. She'd kind of assumed that they'd start small and work their way up, but as Jake had pointed out more than once, there were only so many things that he could do with his cast on, and then when he'd happened across the voucher for the theme park that weekend, it seemed an awful lot like a sign, he'd said. If, of course, he believed in such frivolities, which, despite constantly mentioning them, he absolutely didn't. So here they were, about to begin their very first adventure. Jake started down the path and she jogged lightly to catch up with him. She could hear the low hum of the ride's mechanism punctuated by occasional bursts of screams and cheers, and the sound made her chest tighten. As if he could feel it happen, he looked across at her, his light brown eyes trained on her in a way that made her breath come a little easier.
"Don't worry," he said, his voice warm and steady. "I'm not just going to throw you in at the deep end. This is the mine train ride. I'm not sure if it even counts as a roller coaster, really, but it's a good one to start you off."
She felt a little better at his words, but only a little. It still seemed to be very fast and twisty, and Lydia was not a big fan of fast or twisty. As if they knew that, the designers of the ride seemed to have laid out the path that they were queuing on in order to induce the maximum amount of dread. First, there were only sounds, screeches and rattles and whirs, just vague enough that she couldn't guess when the next noise would come or from which direction. Then, after a few minutes, they'd moved forwards far enough that she could see ominous sections of track, battered and scraped, and then every so often the rush of the train cars thundering past, the people inside little more than a blur. She was fine, she told herself, although even as she thought it, she knew it was a lie. She was still trying to tell herself she was fine as they reached the front of the queue, and she smiled over at Jake as they stepped into their car. He threw their bags carefully to the far side of the platform and sat, pulling the safety bar down onto their legs with his good arm.
"Ready?"
he said with a grin as the ride underneath them lurched into action. And that was the moment when she realised that she really, seriously, wasn't ready. Her stomach fell to her feet as the cars juddered up the small hill climb and then flipped straight up into her throat as they edged over the brow of the hill and began to roll, free-falling down the curve of track in a way that made her heart race and skip, and definitely not in a good way. The cars picked up speed, rattling around tight turns and flicking over small humps with jerks that Lydia could feel in her bones. Literally in her bones at one point, as a particularly sharp bend flung her into the side of the car, her hip bone connecting with something hard and sending a shockwave of pain through her. Then, just as fast, she was flung the other way, ricocheting into Jake's surprisingly solid form and making him laugh and whoop as her hands tightened around the safety rail. Then the train started to slow, rounding one last corner, and Lydia took a deep and very relieved breath as the station where they'd got on the ride came into sight. But that was quickly followed by a very indignant snort back out as the cars neared the beginning point and then whipped back into action, picking up speed and thundering past the waiting crowds. Round the bloody thing went again, round the tight turns and over the small humps, slamming her hip into the same side at the same place, and then back into Jake like lightly traumatic déjà vu. and by the time they rounded the corner to the station again, she was half convinced that the damn thing would do another loop. She could have cried. But it slowed more sharply this time before pulling to an inelegant stop at the exact point where they'd got on. The safety bar popped up and Jake was on his feet straight away, grabbing their bags and turning to look back at Lydia as she waited for her insides to catch up with her. She forced a smile and clambered to her feet, wincing as her hip brushed the corner of the metal safety bar. She could almost feel the bruise forming under her skin.
Okay?
Jake asked, so casually that she felt like she couldn't be completely honest.
Okay,
she replied, her voice sounding much steadier than her guts, and he beamed in response.
So now we've done the baby coaster,
he said, a twinkle creeping into his eye.
Are you up for a real ride?
Baby coaster. She wanted to be sick. She wanted at least to say no. But as the word was about to form in her mouth, an image of Aurora's beautiful, smiling face popped into her head, and she could almost hear Adam's sickly, sweet voice.
She's so adventurous.
Aurora wouldn't throw in the towel after a children's ride. Aurora would be screaming joyfully on the front seat of the roller coaster with her perfect, glossy hair whipping and snapping in the breeze. Aurora would say yes, and if Lydia wanted any chance of reclaiming her place in Adam's life, she needed to learn to say yes too. So she did, to Jake's immense delight, and he practically skipped along as he led her down another wooded path and out into an open section of the park, which was crammed with colours and people and sounds, and the biggest loops of roller coaster track Lydia had ever seen in her entire life. She'd been to theme parks before when Ollie was younger, and before that when she herself was a teenager, but she'd never taken much notice of the size of the rides. She hadn't thought them particularly big when she was the designated holder of bags. Now she actually had to go on them. They seemed enormous, huge and looming, rearing up from the earth like great mechanical beasts. She shuddered, pulling her arms closer into herself even though the late May weather was perfectly clement. She'd dressed as comfortably as her sensibilities would allow her, and she was glad of that now, appreciating the vague warmth her perfectly ironed hoodie gave her as she broke into a cold sweat. There was no mystery to the queue design this time, just a snake of tarmac taking her closer and closer to the screams and screeches of the ride until she was standing right under a coil of track, trying very hard to control her breathing. Jake looked over at her again as they reached the front of the queue, a question in his eyes that he didn't voice. It didn't matter what he was asking, though. She was determined. She was getting on the damn thing if it was the last thing she ever did.
Chapter 8.
It was while perched precariously at the top of a slope so steep she couldn't tell where it ended that Lydia began to worry that perhaps the ride would be the last thing she ever did. She'd survived the queue, her throat tightening with every step she took towards the front of the line. She'd survived the overly complicated over-the-shoulder restraint system, which she'd pulled uncomfortably close to her for fear of flying out and falling to her death. She'd even survived the slow climb to the top of the first hill, each click of the mechanism making her heart thump louder and more quickly. It was then, in the split second of stillness before the cars plunged down into oblivion, that she felt the end was near, with her pulse roaring in her ears and the restraint system holding her so tightly that she had no choice but to give in to the wave of raw panic which was clutching her by the chest. This is it. This is how it happens. And then she was falling, all of a sudden, her stomach a ball of fire rising in her belly and her head screaming with a pressure so intense she thought she might pass out. Faster and faster she fell, each second feeling like an hour or more, as if reality had slowed to an almost tortuous speed. Down and down and down until, a mere fraction of a second before Lydia thought she would hit the ground, the ride whipped back up, thundering around a dizzying combination of turns and loops and dips, so violent that they made Jake's baby coaster seem like a casual drive in the countryside. How could he enjoy this? How could anyone enjoy this? She could almost feel her brain bouncing around the inside of her skull as she gritted her teeth and tightened her grip on the shoulder restraint, as if it alone had the power to save her. There were screams all around her, the rush of air past her face snatching away the hellish wails as quickly as they were uttered. But Lydia didn't scream. She was solely focused on surviving to the end. And as the ride shuddered to a stop, there was a moment where she really believed she hadn't made it. A second or two where she felt weightless, her upper body frozen into its death grip as the world faded to black. And then she heard Jake's voice through the darkness.
Lil?
A pause.
We're finished, come on.
And then a soft snicker before he spoke again, louder this time.
Lily!
The name sent a shudder through her, and she heard her own voice reply, I'm dead. He laughed out loud that time.
You're not dead. You just have your eyes closed.
Huh? She tested him, tentatively cracking one eye open and then the other, as some brute yelled from somewhere to her right,
Get a move on, love.
Jake was quite right. She was indeed alive, although she dreaded the idea of how sore she would be later on. Her neck and fingers were already aching. He offered his good hand from the platform to her left and she took it gratefully, hauling herself from the seat and up out of the car to safety. There was a wobble in her limbs that she couldn't suppress, but wild horses wouldn't have been able to stop her from getting the hell away from that ride as fast as her jelly legs would take her. Jake followed, striding lightly after her with a spring in his step.
Wow!
His good hand went to his hair, pushing the strands away from where they had fallen in his face.
Oh, don't you feel alive?
Lydia couldn't calm the shake of her voice. I feel traumatized. Is that similar? He stopped suddenly, having somehow circled around to her front, and she wasn't able to stop herself from ploughing straight into him. The impact interrupted her flight response completely, and she pulled away from him, rearing back unsteadily as he caught her upper arm lightly in one hand. His brows pulled together.
You hated it.
Hate is a strong word, Lydia said, the tremor in her voice still clear. But in this case, one that I think is entirely appropriate. Her free hand went to her temple. Oh, I think it turned my brain to soup. And that was all it took to wipe the frown off Jake's face entirely. His lips found that off-center smile again as he squeezed her arm gently.
Okay, you hated it. That's fine.
His smile grew.
Let's go find ourselves something to eat and let you recover.
She nodded gratefully, although her stomach was still in knots. Sitting, though. Sitting still was definitely a good idea. He released her arm and though she felt off kilter immediately, she managed to work through it, falling into step beside him.
And then,
he said after a few moments, not looking at her,
we can find a ride you do like.
Lydia forced a smile and tried her hardest not to allow her inward groan to break free.
So,
Jake asked, swallowing his mouthful of hot dog.
Which particular parts of the ride didn't you like?
They'd found a grassy spot up a hill, a little way from the crowds, and Jake had laid out the food they'd bought like a picnic as best he could with his one good arm. They could see much more of the park from there, out as far as the eye could see in almost every direction, and Lydia screwed her face up a little as she cast her eyes around the tangle of tracks and lines and loops and paths. She took a long, slow sip of her drink.
It was the speed, I think.
Okay.
He popped a chip into his mouth, the bridge of his nose crinkling in thought while he chewed.
So, something slower?
And less rickety, she nodded.
Right.
He finished the last of his hot dog in one big bite. Jake ate as fast as he walked. Lydia had barely even started. She picked up a chip and dunked it carefully into her ketchup pot. Without any loops.
Gotcha.
His eyes scanned the park. She could almost see the cogs turning in his head. Or drops. She saw him shake his head lightly in her periphery.
You're killing me.
She laughed at that, reaching for her cheeseburger and taking a big bite. Jake laughed too, pushing back the hair that was blowing into his face, and it was such an easy sound that she felt herself relax a notch.
Well, at least you can cross roller coaster off your bucket list, right?
She tried to say yes, but with her mouth so full, all she could do was hum, and Jake chuckled to himself as she began to dig around in her bag for the list. She rested the paper carefully on her knee before going back into the bag a second time for a pen. It was only then that she noticed Jake holding out a red felt tip with a grin on his face. She couldn't help but laugh. Did you bring a full set with you or just this one?
I like to be prepared.
His smile grew.
Suspected there might be some list crossing off action today.
She took it with a smile of her own and drew a thick red line through 5, ride a roller coaster, putting the cap back on the pen with a flourish.
One down,
he said with a cheeky waggle of both eyebrows.
8 to go.
8 to go, she repeated solemnly, handing the pen back to Jake and taking another bite of her burger. He turned to consider her carefully for a few moments before looking back out over the park, eyes narrowing in thought.
You know that the best thing about writing your bucket list is that you can choose what goes on it, right?
She nodded automatically and reached to take a big gulp of her drink. Of course she knew that, but that was the whole problem, wasn't it? Her choices had driven away her husband. Her choices couldn't be trusted. This was the only way.
I'm trying to broaden my horizons, she said with a shrug, popping the last of her chips into her mouth and screwing up the small paper bag they'd come in.
Okay,
he said, his voice brightening in an instant.
'Cause I have big plans for your next adventure.
Absolutely,